Hey, y'all, welcome back to the Don't Mom Alone podcast. I'm your host, Heather McFadden, and this is the place where I get to walk alongside you and connect you with people and resources so you know that you don't mom alone. And in this episode number 498, it is the first part of a two-part conversation with licensed professional counselor and my friend, Carissa Lopez.
So it's like that idea of repairing, I think, is actually what creates the most security in relationship, because we are going to mess up. And if we have to get really, really good at repair, because if a child feels like I can go to my parents when something's going wrong and we will find a solution, we will find resolution, we'll be able to relationally get back to each other and be connected. That's what we need for security. Can I stay connected to a parent?
Carissa has joined me on this show several times before. If you remember my conversation with her about the window of tolerance and how to connect with our kids through play. And she also came on and did one of the episodes for our Ages and Stages series, the tween years. Well, today we're talking about a topic that she introduced me to on adult attachment patterns. And they are based on our own childhood and they can impact our parenting as well. And again, this is not to add shame to your parenting, which none of us need, but to enlighten you on why you might be responding to your children, to the other adults in your life, the way that you do. And so it's more about education. And then in the second part of our conversation, which we'll release next Monday, we will finish talking about the different attachment styles and talk about intervention for each type. And I wanted to draw your attention to the show notes because there is a special link that takes you to Carissa's website where she has a page just for our listeners with all kinds of amazing PDFs, graphics that walk through some of the content we share today, including loving behaviors and the different patterns. So if you want an easy to reference visual way to see all of this content, she has that available for you on her site. All right, let's get right to it. Here we go. Carissa, welcome back to the Don't Mom Alone podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh my goodness. Well, you and I have been walking life together and you have opened my eyes to see different frameworks and perspectives on a variety of things. Y'all can go listen to the Window of Tolerance episode. So good. Play, how to play with your kids. So many times you've been on the show, our tweens. Today, we're talking about attachment, but in a unique way, something I learned about from you and some other counselors who've come and talked with us, but adult attachment patterns. Is that what it's called?
Yes. And I think it is important, the patterns part. We're talking about patterns, which can shift and can change and can be healed. So yeah, we're talking about patterns.
Yes, because I think a lot of times when people learn about adult attachment patterns, they feel a lot of shame. Mm-hmm. And these patterns were formed in our own childhood experiences and a lot of factors you couldn't control. So we're going to remove any guilt or shame and just recognize it is what it is, but it's not finished and fixed.
Yes.
There is healing and hope, but you have to be aware and you have to acknowledge it. You can't, if, I mean, one of my boys has a infected toe. That's gross. Let's talk about infected toes. But like, you are aware it's hurting. You have to go to a doctor. You have to do something about it. It's not just going to fix itself. So we're going to be here to learn about it. What I learned from you was this adult attachment interview, which lets you know what your pattern is.
Yes.
And you and I did that.
We did that together. Yeah, it was a wonderful experience getting to hear. I learned a lot about you, getting to hear some of your stories from your childhood and relationship with parents and all that. And I think one of the beauties of the adult attachment interview is it is surprising to our unconscious. So we're answering these questions and we're like, I hear so often like, oh, I've never thought about that. Or, oh, I have to think about that. Like, but we get to see about what is the quality of the relationship I had with my mom? What is the quality of relationship I had with my dad? And we're finding and discovering from these questions, was there a lot of attunement? That's a word that we're going to use with attachment all the time, is attunement. And if you think about attunement, It's like tuning in to someone. Like if you're tuning into a radio station, I was trying to think of an example for younger listeners. Tuning in.
Trying to get to the right frequency. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a tuning fork. When you strike a tuning fork, you're like, how do I match that? How do I attune to that frequency, like you were saying? And so we're looking at attunement. Was there a lot of attunement or was there a lot of misattunement? I am having one experience. My parent is totally missing me, or they're having a completely different experience. And so if we're looking at all that together, we start recognizing, oh, there's some clear patterns that start showing up in family of origin between parent and child in terms of what's the quality of the relationship.
And we spend a lot of time on this podcast talking about parenting, how to be a mom or dad that you want to be, but I have found it is really helpful to do some self-reflection on who am I? How am I showing up? Because you could follow somebody's laundry list of parenting, you know, whatever the newest trend is on discipline or whatever. But if you haven't recognized like what is going on in my heart and mind as I'm trying to apply this, you're going to be frustrated, I think, continually. And so I wanted to introduce everyone to these patterns. And we're going to start with, I think, secure attachment and like, you said attunement. So I think let's define attachment, but through maybe the lens of a securely attached pattern. Do you think?
Yeah. So when we're talking about secure attachment, we're talking about how parents in these early years, like these 0 to 3, some scientists would say 0 to 1.5, but we're talking about how needs got met. And so if we're looking at secure attachment, and statistically, like 30% of the time, if a parent is attuning to the child's needs, so giving their full attention to what the child is expressing as a need, then we're getting secure attachment.
Y'all, 30% of the time.
30%. Because, and I think as parents, we experience that we cannot be 100% fully available, attuned, emotionally ready and have all the capacity for a child 100% of the time.
Especially if you have more than one child.
Absolutely. Right. Which is like, yeah, that's nothing you can control.
Because they each have a need different from the other at the same time.
At the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so secure attachment is we're hitting those needs 30% of the time. And one of the ways to think about what creates secure attachment is one of the things we measure is loving behaviors. So mm-hmm. How did the parents express love to the child? And a lot of times I get in my office as a counselor, I'll be doing a parent intake and I'm hearing from them. They have all the extracurriculars. I take them to all the extracurriculars. They want for nothing. You know, it's like all their needs are getting met.
Yeah, they're being fed. They're having their clothes are clean. There's not neglect on any level. Well, yeah.
And we do a Disney vacation once a year. And, you know, it's like they're checking all these boxes. And I'm like, okay, so with the adult attachment interview, you get out of a scale of like 0 points to 9, you get a 3 for that. Like that is like, this is what's expected. We really need to see beyond just meeting the basic needs. And that includes like, and I showed up to all the soccer games. It's like, okay. This
presence,
is kind of baseline.
Presence and care is the baseline.
Well, I wouldn't say presence.
Oh, okay. So just like a being around.
Like it's almost kind of a checking the boxes. Like, of course I fed my child. Of course I clothed them. Of course I bought them a Halloween costume. Of course I did these things to meet the needs and hit the societal standards. That's the base.
Okay.
So we actually want to see beyond that.
Okay. So give me some examples of beyond that.
Okay. So the number one thing that I would start with children, if I'm working with parents, is delight. Mm. To experience delight, to be on the receiving end of delight, is like the best feeling. And man, that is when we feel treasured, we feel cherished, we feel like our parent genuinely enjoys being with us. And as an individual, that is like the most life-giving experience. It's like, I'm delighted in. My parents are just like, they love that I'm their kiddo. And so delight is one of those things where it's like, are we delighting in our child? And I know that is hard. sometimes when our child
some of them are more easily delighted in than others, especially those with some neurodivergence. It can be hard to delight when your life is hard every day.
And so even like weaving that into relationship could look like I have a, he's now 11-year-old son. He just had a birthday. When I've had an experience with him and I just reach into the back seat and hold his hand and be like, gosh, it was so fun being with you today. It's just like that kind of expression of delight. Like, you're so fun to be around. I really like doing, we just had trunk or treat. It's like, I really love having your help.
You think like, of course they know that.
Yeah.
You don't, you know, do you need to say it? And it's like, you go through all the work. Let's say, you know, we just had the state fair or whatever. You said trunk or treat. Go through all the work of doing the thing to just say a sentence of, man, I just love being with you. You would think the experience communicated that.
Right. And there's the assumption that like, look at all the ways I'm loving you. I took you to the state fair. I just spent however many $100s to take you here. And it's like, that is actually not what is translating to the child as love. How much money you spent, the inconvenience of going to the state fair, all the
dealing
work that
with the chaos, dealing with the parking. They don't care about any of that.
None of that is registering to them. But if you look at them and you're like, I had so much fun with you. That's like, I feel delighted. And that hits home.
Wow. So delight. Wow. Yeah. That's a good reminder. And again, y'all, we're thinking of like, what was my experience as an adult? Was I delighted in? And also, now that we are parents, that's just a great, fantastic tip of, or a reminder, man, okay, I can go through all that effort and not delight, and I'm kind of missing a huge part of their attachment need.
Yeah. And I think verbalizing it solidifies it too. It's like, we're just kind of solidifying, like, what's the goal of taking them in the first place, right? It's to like build
relationships. The Instagram picture.
Right, hopefully not. I mean, I hope we get a good one, but also.
I'm just saying, sometimes, Okay, so delight.
So the next one I would talk about would be affection. And it is surprising, like if sometimes for me to hear, like, I'll ask a kid, I'm like, how many hugs do you get a day? And for some kids, it's like zero. And these are littler children. And if we did not grow up in a home where affection was just a normal part of relationship, sometimes we forget to offer that to our children and it can feel awkward. And part of secure relationship is when we are in distress, we are held. When we need soothing, we are comforted. And that is not just with words, but that is being held. That is an arm around. That's like rubbing a back when there's a nightmare. When a child gets injured, we're like pulling them on our lap. We're like taking care of the injury in a way that's like gentle and nurturing. Like that kind of affection is really, really important.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. What's another?
All right. Another one. This one is a little more abstract, but it's supporting our child's inner and outer exploration. And when I say that, you're like, okay, great. Of course. Like, yeah, I want my child to be curious and explore and experience life. But then our own stuff gets in the way of that a lot because our child might be having an inner experience that they're needing to express to us. And in a secure relationship, it's like our child can say anything. And we're like, tell me more about that. Oh, I'm so curious. Where do you think that's coming from? Oh, and we can be reflective with our listening. What I'm hearing you say is this. Am I getting it? We can be validating. Oh my gosh, that sounds so hard, or that was so exciting. Of course you felt that way. And so we're doing all of this. We're showing our child we have capacity. Like you can tell me what's happening inside of you and I'm going to respond with curiosity and validation. And that doesn't mean I agree with everything, but I'm able to contain whatever you're telling me. Like I have space for it. I can be with you in this experience without feeling threatened and activated myself. So that would be part of the secure attachment. And then we see that also on the outer exploration, are we able to let our child explore the world? And again, I think a lot of us as parents, we have a goal of like, Yeah. I would like, you know, when we're thinking about being on the playground, like, okay, let them do all the toys on the playground. Or is my own anxiety of like, stay close. Don't go too close to the street. And it's like, okay, that is showing like there's a struggle here to like validate and allow our child to explore. Because what we really want is we want to be the safe base that our child can go out and explore. And when they're having an experience that's difficult or hard, they can come back to us for comfort and organizing, and then they go back out. And we want this pattern of exploring the world to get bigger and bigger and bigger until they're ready to launch off to college eventually. And we are cheering them on. Like, yes, he's ready. She's ready.
Yeah. And again, reflecting on your own experience.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have that kind of relationship with your parents where you felt, and you know, the trend right now is to talk about how like in the 70s and the 80s, our parents didn't care. They'd be like, go trick-or-treating by yourself. And there was kind of lots of space to explore.
Yes.
In that way. But maybe not the inner thoughts that you were just describing. Like maybe not a safe place to say, man, this happened at school today and da 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 da. Like it was kind of a lot of dismissive. Well, we'll get to what the different types are, but just kind of like, I can imagine that someone's listening being like, of course, my parents let me go do whatever. They didn't care. I was a latchkey kid. I came home. No one was home. That might be in your external exploring, but in your internal exploring, were they a part of that safety? Right?
Exactly. Yeah. You might have a lack of feeling like your parents were with you when difficult things were happening, when you were scared, when you were upset, when you were angry. Did you experience your parent being able to tune into that? Let's talk about this hard thing. Or did you experience a sense of like, you got hurt, rub some dirt on it and keep going? And that is like, I am not
real men don't cry. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Or with the outer exploration, there might have been a sense of too much independence. Like when you reflect on your childhood, you're like, I actually felt alone a lot. Like I felt like I was on my own. And if I couldn't figure it out, no one was going to show up for me and no one was going to do it for me. And that would be that's like an unsafe amount of exploration. Cause it's like, we don't want our child to feel alone in the world. So that sense of being supported and encouraged in our exploration that creates a secure attachment is the sense of, I know my mom or dad is always going to come for me. And if I need them, they're going to be there. I can always come back to them. And when I come back to them and I've explored, I've messed up or I've made a mistake, instead of being punished or shamed or like, well, you have to figure it out. There's a sense of like, I'm with you. Let's figure it out together.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but the prodigal child came to my mind. Mm-hmm. Like the dad waiting for him.
Yeah.
Allowing him to make his mistake and go off and then being there.
Yeah, when he came back. Receiving him. Mm-hmm. Receiving him wholeheartedly.
Mm-hmm. Without shame or without condemnation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Brother wasn't too thrilled. But. Okay, are there any ones we should hit on or should we move into some of the insecure? Is there any major loving behaviors you want to highlight?
I think the other most important one to highlight is the repair.
Yeah.
Because we're
going to make mistakes.
Absolutely. We're going to make mistakes. And if we can have in our mind, the goal isn't don't make mistakes. The goal is repair the mistakes. It's like when we miss our kid, when we have that misattunement, when they are like so excited about something and we totally wet blanket it, do we come back and be like, I'm so sorry I missed you on that.
Yeah.
I am excited for you. This is such a cool thing. And I want to like cheer you on the whole time. So it's like that idea of repairing, I think, is actually what creates the most security in relationship, because we are going to mess up. And if we have to get really, really good at repair, because when we feel like we can, if a child feels like I can go to my parents when something's going wrong and we will find a solution, we will find resolution, we'll be able to relationally get back to each other and be connected. That's what we need for security. Can I stay connected to a parent? Because as soon as there's a rupture, can I get back to them? That becomes really the foundation for having a secure relationship with another person.
And whoever is listening, this could be bringing up some hard stuff for them. Mm-hmm. Because I know I've been in this arena long enough time to know there's a variety of stories, hard stories, and maybe there was a lot of misattuned relationship growing up. Maybe there was actual abuse as a part of your story, and I'm so sad that this is part of our broken world, and I'm so sad that you aren't given that love and security that I know God wants you to have. And again, there is hope. You're not, I don't like the word, you're not broken. Like, right. This is a pattern, like you said. And I love how you also say you have needs for this attachment. And when it's not there, our brains are so smart, we find ways to get it.
Yes.
But it may not be the most healthy pattern, but it helped keep us safe, you know?
Absolutely. And I think that's a wonderful way to think about and talk about insecure attachment patterns. So we were just kind of talking about what are some of the hallmarks of having a secure relationship, a secure attachment pattern. And then if we aren't experiencing that kind of repair and that kind of attunement into light, then we might struggle to get our needs met. We might struggle to feel heard and seen and known, and even get some of our even more basic needs met. And so when that happens, we develop ways of getting needs met that fall into some pretty clear patterns. And those are what we're calling kind of the insecure attachment.
Which sounds like insecurity has a negative connotation. Like, I'm so insecure, you're so insecure, but it's just the opposite of secure attached, right?
Right, right. So we're saying like the relationships feel a little unreliable. They feel a little unstable, like that kind of insecurity. Like,
yeah.
I'm not sure that the people I need to be there for me in my moments of distress and anger and hurt or delight, I don't know that they're going to be able to show up for me the way that I'm hoping and wishing and needing them to show up.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are those patterns?
Okay. So we're going to start with the dismissive pattern. And so this is someone who, and I'll kind of start of like when we're a child, we had parents that struggled to be with us when we were experiencing uncomfortable or negative emotions. So if we're experiencing hurt, fear, or anger, we're going to notice, or sadness, the parent would either try and fix, because they're like, okay, I can't tolerate you being in this state, so I'm going to try and move towards you and fix it. Or I'm going to be maybe blow up a little and be like, get over it, move on. But what I'm not experiencing is my parent being okay with me having uncomfortable emotions and just being with me in them. And so the pattern that kind of comes from that is you have a child that learns to lead with their thinking. So they're going to be logic, reason, data, and they're suppressing the feeling. So they're learning over time that what I'm feeling, what I'm needing, what I'm desiring, I actually have to set that aside, because if I bring that to the forefront, my parents actually disengage, which is creates the insecurity. And so I have to take my feelings, desires, needs, set them aside in order to stay connected relationally. So you can kind of maybe imagine how we extrapolate that out. Like, if that's the pattern as a child, then this becomes a teenager who is putting up with really can sometimes be like manipulative, abusive relationships, because they're like, my needs don't matter. I'm taking those offline. And I'm getting into relationship with people who are willing to take advantage of that. And so it's like, okay, great.
And then when you become a mom, what is it? A mom that's dismissed, like has that dismissive pattern. What would she look like as an adult?
So as an adult, when we're parenting a child, and this is our attachment pattern, is one of the hallmarks is we're creating overly independent children instead of interdependent. So interdependent is the sense of I need you and you need me, and that's good and healthy and right. And the independent is like, actually, I'm doing everything I can to make you not need me. So I'm going to develop all the systems and routines. You're going to take care of yourself These are the ones that they're like packing their lunch at 5 or 6 off to school. And it's like, okay.
And it can look like, and they can, there can be a badge of, I think, badge of honor of like, I'm creating these independent children. This is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. And these are the kids who are feeling alone, that they have to figure out life by themselves. And if they need help, it may not come. Or if they're showing that distress, then mom or dad is not going to have a lot of patience for it.
Yeah. And what you were saying too is like, if I was maybe parented dismissively, I might then gain that pattern myself. And does it just keep perpetuating?
Yeah. So 75% of the time, whatever the attachment pattern was of the adult, it's going to be transferred to the child. Because if we don't pause to kind of evaluate our patterns and be like, wait a minute, this pattern that I developed when I was 1, 2, 3, that I'm using in literally every relationship in my life, do I want to keep doing this? Is my 3-year-old self the dictator of how I do relationships? Or can I like reevaluate that at some point?
Yeah. I mean, you're not stuck. If you're listening, you're like, we've said this before, we'll say it one more time. If you're that, if you have that pattern, it's not set and stuck. You're not stuck forever in that pattern. There are ways of learning new interactive methods.
Absolutely.
And behaviors.
With a dismissive pattern, one of the predominant emotions you're going to see is anger. And the goal of the anger is to get some distance. Because what often happens in dismissive patterns with parent to child was, when I was struggling, if I express the struggle, I have a parent who either comes and takes over, which doesn't feel good, because then I'm being told, you can't figure it out, you're not good enough, whatever. But the parent is trying to solve their own distress. I just want this to be over. Or you have a child who is experiencing abandonment by the parent because they're having this struggle and the parent can't deal with it or be with them in it, so they leave. And so the child learns, if I use anger, I'm warding off the parent who tries to take over, and it gives me some distance. And so that's one way to think about this dismissive pattern, is there's kind of this constant managing of proximity. I don't want to be abandoned, so I'm trying to take my needs offline so you'll stay connected to me. But also, I will sometimes blow up and use my anger when I feel like I am being taken over by someone, because truly, we all want autonomy. And so when we're not experiencing that, we will use that anger. So sometimes you won't notice a dismissive child until they make a mistake, they fail, or they reach the limit. And then there's an explosion of anger. And then you're like, well, this kid's always like, usually like doing so well. And then we have this explosion. And part of the reason I said like make a mistake or fail in this dismissive pattern, that's another thing that gets, I think, inadvertently prioritized. It's like, if we can't be with our child when they're struggling with uncomfortable emotions, we put a lot of attention on our child when they're achieving and they're doing really well at things, at their performance. And so what gets communicated inadvertently is, I am loved and attuned to when I'm doing amazing, when I'm achieving and performing. And so the relationship feels very tied to that performance and achievement. And so if they fail or they make a mistake, they're not just afraid of the actual failure or the mistake and what they're going to have to do. They're afraid of losing relationship. Like, the relationship is now, I might experience a withdrawal from my parents or loved ones because I'm not performing or achieving the way that's expected to maintain relationship.
And I'm curious too, like, firstborns probably feel that a lot.
Yeah.
Do you think there's like a birth order, maybe firstborns and youngest? There's a lot of pressure on them to perform.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think the last thing to say about dismissive would be like, they're going to try and be okay even when they're not okay. And sometimes as parents, we can notice that. We're like, I don't think you are okay. Even though they're like, I'm fine, it's no big deal. Like, my son, I think, could be a little bit more this way. And so it's like, when he's distressed, he'd be like, I'm fine. And he's trying to be fine, but he's not fine.
Yeah. It's like that video, have you seen it, of the little girl? And she's like smiling, but she's crying. She's like, it's good. I'm fine. It's like so obvious that she's not. I mean, yeah. But that requires then the parent, though, to be pretty attuned.
Mm-hmm.
To noticing that that's the message doesn't match your behavior, like what your non-verbals are saying.
Yeah. And so that, I think when we have a dismissive child, or we were a dismissive child, what we were always wanting was someone to like push through the facade, push through the mask that we had on. And so it often takes more than one attempt to get through that. So we might say like, you look like you're having a little hard time. You want to talk about that? No, I'm fine. I'm fine. It's like, we might have to ask two or three times to really get in there, because they're so used to, as soon as I say I'm fine, and it's like, okay, great. Let's keep moving. Let's keep going.
Yeah.
But it's like, if we can like really pause and really lean into, okay, but your face is saying you're not a fine. Can we talk about this? That pursuit feels really good and safe. And then it's like, okay, maybe I can share with you what's going on.
And I can imagine communicating the love outside of performance would feel good.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Like if I'm an adult interacting with an adult who has that pattern, letting them know outside of something great they did that I see them and that they're valuable to me.
Yeah.
Would feel good.
Yeah. Cause as adults with this pattern, we tend to find hobbies and things that we're going to crush it at, instead of like, can I just go do painting with a twist and be messy? Like, okay, great. Like, just go try something. Like, we forget. I'm probably more on the dismissive side of things. And so it's like, we forget, oh, it's okay to just enjoy life and have fun and like do things just for the sake of doing them because they're enjoyable, not because I'm like achieving or accomplishing something when I do it.
Well, even communicating to my husband, who you know and love, it's okay to sit on the couch and watch a game.
Yes.
I'm not thinking anything about you. Like, I'm not going to remove relationship if you do that. You're not quote unquote lazy. You're not unlovable because you want to relax and watch a basketball game. You feel so much guilt about it. So, yeah.
That's a great
it's
example.
Just interesting that that's tied to attachment. I wouldn't think, but yeah, that makes sense. Thanks, y'all. Like I said, that's just the first part of our conversation. We were talking and there's so much to cover that we realized, you know what, let's just make this a two-part episode, because we really wanted to get into the intervention side so that you don't feel stuck. Your attachment style is not fixed. It can be repaired through relationships and through different resources. So I want to encourage you to come back next week. If you aren't subscribed to the Don't Mom Alone podcast, this would be a great time, because it'll just pop into your podcast player, this second part of the episode. I'm going to pray over us. Lord, I thank you that you are our true hope. You are the one who made us, and you made us this way. We both need people and can be hurt by people. And we thank you that you don't leave us in that pain and that woundedness, but you provide a way through more relationships with people. And I pray for the person listening who may be feeling guilt or shame about their own parenting or how they were parented, that you would be their comfort and their guide, and that they would bring it to you, that we're all humans who are limited, doing the best that we can from whatever we were given. And so, Lord, I pray for grace to be abundant. I pray that this information would only improve relationships in families, within families, with extended families over the holidays. In Jesus' name, amen. That is one of my hopes with bringing up this topic right before Thanksgiving and Christmas, that if you are going to be seeing some extended family, that this would just maybe help you have grace for a parent or an uncle or an aunt and how they respond to situations. Anywho, I found it really helpful. I hope you do as well. So I will meet you back here next week for the rest of that conversation. Adios. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Don't Mom Alone podcast. If you're wanting to connect with more people and more resources to help remind you that you're not alone, head over to don'tmomalone.com. That's where you'll also find show notes with any links mentioned by our guests. Most importantly, I want you to know the good news, the great news, that you're not alone, because God has promised to always be with you. with faith in Jesus Christ, the one who died for you and rose again, Jesus said when he left, he was going to leave a helper, a comforter, to be with us. God in us. Moms, that's superpower. So while you're washing dishes at your kitchen sink, while you're driving to and from work, while you're feeding that baby late into the night, while you're cleaning sticky floors, God promises to be just as present with you as when you're worshiping in a church pew. As it says in Zephaniah 3:17, the Lord your God is with you. He is mighty to save. He takes great delight in you. He will quiet you with his love, and he will rejoice over you with singing. Now that's good news. Have a great day.